Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Good afternoon. It is time for New Horizon, the mind and the body connection with Dr. Keisha Ross, right here on the Intentional Talk Radio Network. She's got a great show. Dr. Keisha Ross, take it away.
One and welcome to New Horizon, the Mind and Body Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Keisha Ross, and we are on Intentional Talk Radio Network. We have a really exciting show for you today, as I have the opportunity to have the co-founders of Intentional Talk Radio Network here with us today to talk about Black representation in media. So before we get started, let me do a bit of a bio and intro, and then we will get right into it. Yolanda C.S. Williams is a mother, radio personality, talk show host, entrepreneur, business owner for more than 40 years. She is a coach, motivator, and program developer. Her experience is vast, and she is passionate about working with students, families, and business owners in building sustainable relationships. Her goals are to build a media empire that will increase the visibility and bring a clear message that will inspire, motivate, and encourage the Black community to build better and stronger and create generational wealth and stronger families. Ms. Williams was also the youth director for the National Congress of Black Women for the LA and San Gabriel Valley chapters and a member for 6 years. She has worked and developed relationships with community organizers, businesses, with civic and community leaders. She has implemented radio programs, character education programs, life skills programs for schools, civic community organization. Her ability to interact with community members, leaders, parents, students, and professional members allows her to demonstrate her passion in working in communications, business development as a change agent in professional environments. We also have Mr. Ken Strasser, who is president of Intentional Talk Radio Network. He is a retired network communications and telecommunications professional with nearly 40 years in the business. He has worked as network manager, consultant, project manager, and technical sales support. Mr. Strasser attended Pasadena City College, West Los Angeles College, and Brookhaven College in Dallas. His passions for politics and community-mindedness led him to collaborate with his sister, Yolanda Williams, and start the Intentional Talk Radio Network. Their purpose is to change the narrative and bring a different mindset to the discourse by bringing solutions to the table. Welcome to both of you. It's wonderful to have the dynamic brother and sister duo here today. How are you all doing?
Good, good. Thank you for having us.
Groovy. Oh. We're all good.
Good, good, good. So I just want to talk a little bit about the thoughts for today. And people may be thinking mental health, physical health. Where does media play a role in that? But media plays a pretty good role in that. So today, what we want to talk about, we'll talk about racism in media, how it impacts mood, emotional well-being, and the importance of representation within media. And you all will talk with us a good bit about that. So I just want to set the stage a bit with some stats. So in 2015, the average U.S. resident consumed traditional meaning like TV and digital media for about 15 and a half hours each day. In the same year, 8 to 12 year old children consumed an average of 6 hours of media a day, and teens consumed 9 hours. I know this may seem mind boggling, right? So this is a cumulative amount of exposure to media. So what we have to realize is that racial imagery is a large part of media, and there can be a cumulative effect on society. So there's often biased and stereotypical portrayals of racial groups, especially African Americans. And so we can't dismiss this and just say, oh, it's entertainment. No one takes this seriously. It's not going to have an impact. We recognize that it definitely has an impact on adults and children, but especially children who are just forming their core beliefs about others and the world. So we are very excited to have you here today and talk with us a bit about the journey of developing intentional talk radio. So why don't we start there? Tell us about Intentional Talk Radio Network.
Well, who do you want to go first, me or Ken?
Ooh. Go ahead. Ladies first.
it actually began with a simple thought. I was in Dallas for Thanksgiving, and this was 7 years ago. And we took out our trusty laptops and said, let's see if we can put our faces on camera and see what happens. Maybe we can do a talk radio show. And we got it out and we sat at the kitchen table and we just started talking about it. And remember, businesses, great businesses are created at the kitchen table or in the garage. We happen to use his kitchen table. And we sort of kind of figured it out. I always said, I don't want my face on the camera. I'm not photogenic. So I wasn't thinking about putting my face on camera, but Ken kept saying, let's see what we can do. Well, I left and went back to California. And by the time I got back to California, I think it was a Monday morning, he called me and says, I got it. He says, I found Black Talk Radio Network. We can do our show on Black Talk Radio Network. Well, we put our heads together. We came up with a format. We came up with a show titled. We thought about what would be intriguing, what would be something that people would gravitate to, what could we do that would make people listen. And we continued to talk about it. We came up with our name and we thought about what it would take to get people to listen to a talk radio show, specifically Black people. Because what we have found is, by and large, Black folks don't listen to talk radio. Black folks want to be entertained. They've been told that they are the entertainers. Therefore, they also need to be entertained. Well, in all the years that we've done this, 7 years, we have not found that that is not a fact. And it is. There are folks who do listen to talk radio, so we're not going to say that the entire population in this country of Black folks will not listen to talk radio, but by and large, Black folks just don't want to be talked to, just like Black folks don't read. So when you talk about imagery and you talk about what needs to happen so that there can be changes in the Black community, and that's why we do intentional talk radio. It is really quite, I don't want to say troubling, but it is troubling. Go ahead, Ken.
You're absolutely right. And I would add that, you know, I've been listening to talk radio for, you know, 30 plus years. I started years and years ago. And one of the things I did always notice is that the right wing owns the talk radio airwaves, you know, with Rush Limbaugh, Ben Shapiro, Laura Ingraham. You know, I could go down the line with how many people on the right listen to talk radio. People on the left generally don't. And then a subculture on that is Black people. Black people especially don't. Now, you've got, The Breakfast Club. But The Breakfast Club is primarily entertainment. And then they do some commentary. D.L. Hughley does some great commentary. I love his commentary. But his commentary is sandwiched between all the entertainment. And so one of our goals is to not be entertainment. And we struggle with that all the time. Because, you know, when we struggle with getting more and more listeners, we keep saying, well, do we need to have more entertainment? And we understand the dynamics of it. From a business standpoint, maybe you need a little more entertainment. But we really want to... The message that we have is education, enlightenment, and edification, you know, and so people need that. And so that's why we do the show. We have shows like yours. We have, I think, 5 doctors doing programs, very high level, highly educated, highly intelligent people doing programs, disseminating information that people need. Okay, and so that's where we are, and that's really our goal, is to get more and more information out there from the people that can provide that information to the people.
you made some interesting points there in terms of entertainment. And entertainment is a wonderful field, so it's not to diminish entertainment. Right, yeah. But there's also the stereotype for many centuries of Black people as only entertainers or sports professionals. So that's a wonderful part about Intentional Talk Radio. Not that sports and athletics isn't important or entertainment, but you also have many shows that are related to mental health, physical health, you know, different aspects of culture. So it's important to recognize that. So part of what we wanted to highlight today is race in media. And even when we look back to early films, some such as like The Birth of a Nation from 1915, which was originally called The Klansman, and it was played at the White House, or shows like Tarzan, we see the depiction of Blacks as like savages, ignorant thieves, you know, these negative type of stereotypes. And then we also see within film that you didn't even see Black people portraying themselves. You saw white people in blackface. So it sent this message that Black people couldn't even represent themselves. So that's like on the media end of like visual imagery. So now as you talk about radio as well, driving in your car in the morning, dropping the kids off to school, picking them up from school, it's important to recognize that what we take in during the day, it also feeds us. So media is very important and it is very powerful in terms of what we take in. So tell us more about your mission, you know, on both of your ends. You talked about, you know, elevating the platform. Tell us more about that for Intentional Talk Radio Network.
When we decided to, actually, we did not decide on our own. We were pushed to do our own. Our producer and engineer, who is also the principal at Black Talk Radio Network, he kept telling us and giving us accolades about how well we were doing simply because we started as novice, but he kept telling us, take your message to the people, get it out there. And we kept thinking about what we wanted to call it, what our name should be. And we thought very, very clearly, a message, the narrative and the trajectory. We thought about the narrative and what it meant to the community. And this is simply not for entertainment. This is to educate, enlighten, inform, and also edify. And we came up with Intentional Talk Radio Network because for Ken and I, we don't do this just for fun. It's not a hobby. This is with very clear intention. It is with direction and purpose. So Intentional Talk Radio, we have the intention and we have the desire to change the narrative. We have our show, Change Matters Solutions. And change matters because it does. It always matters. So the message that we are doing our best to convey is that we not only created this radio network to bring intention, but we also want to change the narrative. We also want to offer solutions. We also want people to understand that things don't have to be the way you are told they are. You can change this yourself. You can change this yourself. And what folks just don't get is that marketing companies, advertisers are huge, huge businesses because that business creates an image that you buy. You buy into every single thing that they say. That's why people spend millions of dollars on creating a logo that becomes the logo forever, their image. That's why companies spend billions of dollars on their marketing, who they're going to market to, what items they're going to put in specific neighborhoods, how they're going to market this to this group of people, how they're going to market it to that group of people. I also noticed Nielsen is changing their ratings. And one of the things that I have noticed in 21 is that not only are we missing the boat, But last year when the riots took place after the George Floyd horrible tragedy, after that tragedy, and people took to the street, they went to social media, and social media allowed people to gather. Millions of people gathered and they marched and they protested. Well, look at all of the things that have happened in media since then. Patrice Cullors got a job at Warner Brothers. She's made a boatload of money. Black folks are now being put in key positions. Look at the images that we see on television. Look at what we're hearing. Look at all those things. But why did it take George Floyd being killed in order to make those things happen? So when we think about what's happening in talk radio, what's happening in the Black community, that's why Ken and I do this, because people should wake up. Go ahead, Ken.
You know, there's an old saying that art imitates life. But yes. Life yes. Also imitates art, because if you continue to show people the same imagery mm-hmm. over and over and over again, they begin to buy into that imagery. Some of it is yes. in your face. Some of it is very subtle. There was a commercial on a few years ago. I think it was a car commercial. And there were two sets of twins, guys, two black guys, two white guys. It may seem innocuous. Oh, that's nothing. Maybe you're overreacting, but it's not, because images are important. In this commercial, the two white guys, both sets of twins are probably in their mid-20s, were sitting at little desk. They had a calculator. Remember the old guys with the visor on when they were accountants and the suspenders? They were dressed like that. And the two black twins were dancing.
The stereotype again.
Exactly. Again.
And to be an entertainer.
For most people, they again, yes. it may say, oh, that's nothing. No, it is. It is very, very important. Now, that's not to say we haven't had entertainers on our program. We've had Chris Jasper, Danny Glover, Danny Glover, Peebo Bryson, the Climax Band. We've had a lot of it, but it's always been in the context of education and edification about where we are.
Yes.
We talk about their craft, their entertainment, but we also talk about the issues that plague us today. Because when we were growing up, we're both boomers, when we were growing up, all entertainers, whether you wanted to, black entertainers, whether you wanted to be or not, you were an activist. You had no choice. Because remember, they could go gig at joints, but they couldn't get in the front door. They'd have to mm-hmm. go through the back door.
Segregation.
So you had to be an activist. And nowadays, it's not like that. So those are the messages that we want people to understand. And you mentioned something about us not even be able to portray ourselves. Back in the 50s, in the early 60s, black people could not, black entertainers were not even on their own album covers. They had white people sitting at the beach with a little picnic basket or something on albums where the musicians and all the singers were black. So it's been that way since the beginning of time, since we've been here. And again, our message is to change that narrative, to make sure that people understand, to get the message out. We are more than entertainers. We are more
right.
than athletes. We right. are, again, we've had Stephanie Wilson, who's a good friend of Yolanda's on, who's an astronaut. We are involved with OBAP, the Organization of Black Aerospace Professionals.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So all of these people, and I remember in the 80s, a lot of the talk was that one of the problems we're having in the black community is that there are no good, positive role models.
Right.
Bull. People were just looking in the wrong place for the role model. The role models were there.
Right.
People just did not know where to look for them. And those are the barriers we're trying to break. And those are the messages we're trying to send.
Right. And I wanted to add to that, if you don't mind.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
The other thing is that we have to be entertained. So when you look at what's going on television or on radio, as Ken said, Rush Limbaugh, Howard Sterling, Joe Rogan, all of those people do talk radio, and millions and millions and millions of people listen to them. And it's clearly understood that we don't have millions of people listening to talk radio. We just don't. It's a fact. So we have to change that. And that's why we do intentional talk radio. Thank you.
Excellent points about imagery. And I just want to talk a little bit about the doll test or the doll study by Drs. Kenneth and Mamie Clark. And that was an experiment, and many people listening may know of it. If they don't, you can look more into it. But it was looking at the psychological effects of segregation on African-American children. And children were shown the white doll and the black doll and, you know, asked to share which they preferred. And what they often found, that the positive attributes went towards the white doll and the negative attributes went to the black doll. So, you know, some people might hear that and reductionistically say, well, you know, what's the big deal about that? The big deal is that for black children, they could not see positivity within themselves because all of the images that they have seen and the messages that were shared with them were negative messages about being black. Black equals being bad. You know, it means being inferior. Something's wrong with you. You can't do the same thing as other people. So, you know, that study has been reproduced many times over the decades, and we still, you know, haven't moved far from that because we still see a great deal of imagery of the gold standard being the European standard, you know, even within the black community, how women wear their hair. So nothing wrong with if we want to wear our hair straight, but we also have to recognize that we haven't had a space where it has been accepted. And in the 60s and the 70s, we definitely had the Afro, and we see now reemerging again, a lot of black women going back to that because it's that level of comfort of who you are. So again, I love that you have it as intentional talk radio, that we have to be intentional. We have to be intentional with teaching our children who and what they are, teaching them about African civilization, teaching them about American history, not just black history, because black history is American history, because so much has been built by black people in America and the world over. So as you mentioned that, it's so important for us to recognize the power in what we hear and in what we see. So tell us a little bit more about other ways in which you work to build equity. So having this representation, now that you have this platform and this space, what are some of the projects, some of the things that you have going on?
Ken, do you want me to take that?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, since we began 7 years ago, I think it may have been our second year, we began coordinating and producing town hall meetings. So we started with town halls. In fact, I believe it was our first, I think it was our first town hall, was held at the California Music Museum. That
Blues and Jazz Museum?
Blues and Jazz Museum, yeah. I think. That's
over
it.
On
Leimert Park. And the principal there is Barbara Morrison, who is a legend in jazz, in that genre, and has been for decades. We have done countless, I'm not going to say countless, we've done five town halls, I can count that far, five town halls. We've done three meetings with 10 doctors on because of COVID. And we don't necessarily call those town hall meetings, but they are a coordination of information where we bring 10 doctors together to disseminate information about COVID-19. And we've done three of those. The first one was COVID-19 and the Black community, its impact everywhere on the Black community. Then we did COVID-19 and the vaccine. And the latest one was COVID-19. We're still in it, which was in September. We will do another COVID-19 sometime the first quarter of the year because we're still in COVID-19. So we've actually done about five town hall meetings. We've done the three COVID-19 town halls, if you will. I do remotes. I go out to different events and I will do a remote at the events. And again, this is to disseminate information to people who really need to get the information. When we did the first two, actually all three COVID-19 big workshops, if you will, because it was a lot of learning and a lot of talking to get information out to people. It was really to enlighten people on what was going on in the community, because a lot of that people don't get. They don't get it, mm-hmm. and they don't hear it. They just don't. So we wanted to dispel the myth that if you took the vaccine, you'll turn into a zombie in less than 5 years. We wanted to dispel
that. I'm sorry. I'm trying not to laugh, but these really, you're hearing these things. I work in a clinic and a psychiatrist was telling me that, you know, they heard one Black patient said that they were going to start barking like a dog and turn into a dog. So, and I mean, if you really didn't hear these things live and in person, you would have to say these things aren't real. So thank you for being a source of getting scientific information. And that's what I always encourage patients and clients. You know, where are you getting your information? Don't get it from the conspiracy theorists. Don't get it from places that doesn't have science. Get it from scientists. Now, if you get all of the scientific information and you still arrive at where you are, then fine. But, but base it on science. So thank you for that.
And it became, I'm not even going to say a running joke because it has gotten serious, but you'd be surprised at what people have said. And I'm not going to take that. And if I take that, someone was very serious when she says, I might turn into a zombie in 5 years. And I answered her by saying, I'm sure that you won't. You're already a zombie. So you should just go ahead and get it. So then the other is one of the things that I had to say during the COVID-19 broadcasts was that it's interesting that people come up with all of these theories, these made up theories. So the question was, who do we believe? Do we believe you who listen to Facebook, or do we believe the science? Do we believe the science because they are the ones who created this? Or do we believe you who are Facebook chasers? So we did answer the question. We did have each show that we've had, each broadcast for COVID-19, we've had 10 doctors, 10 scientists, some of them who are emergency room doctors who work tirelessly in helping people, saving lives, getting the information so that they can disseminate it. And they come to our network with open arms to disseminate this information to help people so that people don't walk around with these theories in their heads and they're not getting the right information. We've got great doctors that work with us and they disseminate information that people can really trust. And that's the biggest thing. People need to learn how to trust.
And I want to add to that is that, and you talk about media and how important media is and how strong media is and the type of influence. The reason that we're in the position we are with people not trusting the science is because between 2016 and 2020, there was an attack on the media, and there's still an attack going on. And whenever I hear somebody, when the term mainstream media comes out of their mouth, you know, I immediately understand where they're coming from, you know. And people are not trusting the science because what they've been hearing is don't trust the media, don't trust this. We had we had 10 doctors on. I can't remember if it was the first or the second one. And one of the doctors we were not familiar with, he was not part of the ITRN family. Someone had invited him. And the first words out of his mouth were, that Dr. Fauci is the devil. We literally, I had to shut him down. I had to say, I had to mute him and say, we are not going there. This is insane.
No name calling.
Yeah.
You had to referee
because he went off the deep end.
You know, he did.
If you have some information that and you don't like that Fauci, that's fine. I don't trust anybody to the nth degree. But am I going to trust Dr. Fauci, who has worked for six presidents, more than 30, 40 years as an infectious disease doctor, you know, or some random dude on the internet, or Nicki Minaj's cousin's friend Bahamas who, you know, this is the problem. This is the problem with, again, where we were for those past 4 years, and people are not trusting. And you talk about trusting the media. And this is why the media is so important, because people begin to believe it. They're, you know, the saying that you keep, what is it? You tell the lie 7 times or 10 times.
Yeah.
People start thinking it's the truth, but you tell the lie over and over. We've been lied to. We have been lied to since the beginning of media, whether it was radio with Amos and Andy, or whether it was television with Amos and Andy. What was the movie? You mentioned the movie back
Birth
in
Birth of a Nation.
Birth of a Nation.
We've been constantly lied to. And we've begun to accept those lies. We've begun to accept those negative images. And many of us have begun to accept that we are supposed to be broke. We are supposed to be living in poverty. We are supposed to be downtrodden. We are supposed to have bad credit scores. We're not supposed to own homes. All these things we have bought into these negative ideas about who we are, because the media has done a brilliant job in pushing those images to us. I was watching, I've got a Roku stick, you know, for my smart TV, and it's got some just random stuff out there. And one night I was watching, and it's got some of the movies broken down into genres, and one was black movies. I said, okay, let me watch one. The dialogue was so bad. I mean, the women just kept referring to each other by the B word. I mean, in this one scene that must have been a 15-minute scene, they must have referred to each other 15, 20 times in that manner. And I thought about this a couple of days ago. Why is it that when you watch, quote unquote, mainstream movies, they try to put themselves in the best of light? They try to show the best of themselves, whether it's James Bond, whether it's Rambo, whether it's any of these people, an officer and a gentleman, and all these things. And even when we get a chance to portray ourselves and make movies, we portray the worst of our people because we have bought into the lies.
You brought up an excellent point there, both of you. And it's the psychology of oppression.
Yes, it is.
So we oppress in different ways, right? So there was physical forced labor, enslavement, but that's where psychological slavery came in, because slave owners recognized that even the most terrible physical treatment wasn't sustainable, because it would either kill some slaves or put them in conditions where they couldn't work. So then they recognized that psychological slavery was more powerful. So oppressing us internally and putting us against each other, that's what they did. So now, as you said, yes, we suffer from internalized or misappropriate oppression because we've taken in the oppressor's beliefs, and we've been captive for so long. It's like when you hear people who Stockholm syndrome, you know, they've been captive for so long, but they build an affinity with their captor, because sometimes to survive and to exist, they have to have that relationship. Otherwise, they might be killed, or they may be treated even more inhumanely. So there's that mix of it that we have as a byproduct from slavery. You know, Dr. Joy DeGry's post-traumatic slave syndrome, it's a mix of Stockholm syndrome. It's in that internalized type of oppression. So historically with media, so that's 1915 for the Birth of a Nation. So in the 1970s gave rise to what you said, Mr. Ken, which is blaxploitation. So we had decades of like pimps, prostitutes, gangsters, nothing positive. And that has carried all the way through. Then the civil rights movement came along and we tried to make changes, but still weren't the gatekeepers. And we still aren't. In terms of media, but we're seeing now that there's more opportunity, like the Shonda Rhimes or Antoine Fuqua. We have more directors, producers. We have the Viola Davises. So willing to tell different type of stories and not only the stereotypical type of stories about us.
Right.
Can I bring something up? Let me just say this real fast. We talk about the psychological warfare that basically has been waged against us. You know, in the, you know, we are children of the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And I remember that, and our mother was heavily involved in the civil rights movement. She was a very good friend of Dick Gregory. He used to come to our house. He used to go running in the morning. Yes. And things like that. So we were very involved. We were involved with the Black Panthers, Black Muslims, all we were involved with all that sorts of that, those things. And they knew that they had to do something about that. They saw the collectiveness that we were beginning to have in our community. Of course, they introduced crack into the neighborhoods in the 80s and things like that. And that did enough damage. And then in the 90s and into the 2000s, they took the music. And they took the hip hop genre and rap music, and they told these young entertainers, you can no longer, we will not sign your contract unless you do this gangster rap and this negative rap. And I would argue that the damage done by the negative rap in the past 20 years could be even more detrimental than what the crack epidemic did. You can go to rehab.
Or just as bad. That's right.
You can go to rehab for a drug addiction. Now, you can get help for the psychological damage done by this negative rap, but they don't see it. People are saying it's just music. The number of rappers killed in hip hop guys since in the past, I think, 20 years is 100. And, I think it's about 115, 116. Wow. A guy just got killed 2 weeks ago. Young Dolph. Guy got here a few months ago in Dallas. I don't forget his name. Every time you look up these rappers, and the problem is, and I get people that push back and say, well, white kids buy 80% of that music. That may be true, but guess what? At the end of the day, when they go home, it's all Leave It to Beaver.
Yes.
No,
they're not oppressed.
And they're not trying to live that lifestyle. They're not trying to live that. It's music to them.
And even if they do, if they get arrested, they have a better chance in the system.
That's right.
So be for us, because of the economic struggles and that a white household has hundreds, 200 plus times more wealth overall.
Yes.
Now we know we have white people in poverty. We're saying overall
as a full group,
200 plus times the wealth. So their chances in the system is still going to be better than the black or brown individual.
Right. Just like the man in Missouri who stayed 43 years in prison.
Right.
Wrongful conviction. 43 years for a triple murder that he did not commit. And when he got out, when he was released, he could not get any restitution because they did not, what did they say, Ken? They did not, they found that it was.
I didn't get a chance to read the story, but it was
a wrongful conviction. But he got out and won't get any money. He will not get any money.
Wow.
So the attorney took to social media, created a GoFundMe page for him, and they've raised over $1 million. $1.4 million for this man who stayed in for 43 years, a wrongful conviction. A wrongful conviction, a triple murder for 43 years.
And this is why media is important, because we have to have a space to discuss these things and to plan. So as you said, not just changing the discourse, but what are the solutions? Because oftentimes in our community, we need spaces to vent. We do. I'm a therapist. So come go to your therapist counselor so you can vent. But then you also after that venting, we're going to have, you know, evidence-based treatment and strategic tools. But it's the same within our communities, in our church, in our temples, in our mosques, places, in our schools. We have to be working on solution focused remedies, meaning what are the things that we can do? And I tell my clients and patients all the time, take a break from negative media.
Yes.
If you are going to be on media, be intentional. Follow positive people.
Right.
Follow intentional talk radio network. Follow Association of Black Psychologists or Latin Psychologists. Follow people who are talking about ways to help you. How do you heal from racial trauma? What are the things you can do to be safe? But if you're watching the news six times a day, and I listen, I understand that's the baby boomer generation. My father, he's that generation. I gotta watch the news. I'm like, Dad, they have black and brown bodies being beaten, being mistreated. Now it's like a diet, like food. Now I'm not saying that you gotta go full vegetarian. You might eat meat now and then. It's the same with the news. Watch your news later in the week so you can get a like cumulative synopsis of everything that has happened. But when you listen, as you said, programming, the same story happens over and over again. So if I have a client who has a fear of flying, if God forbid there's a plane crash, or does it happen that often? Don't the last it. One at the husband, right. Don't watch it because it's a, like it. 11 million and what to one chance to have.
I'm that guy. I'm that guy. That, I don't watch that stuff.
But when you listen to that every day now, you're going to be even more afraid to fly. You'll be afraid to leave your home.
Right.
It increases the race-based stress and trauma, you know, type of feeling, like just driving in your car, being afraid to be pulled over by the police. And while it can happen, yes. Mm-hmm. You don't need to listen to it over and over again because it's just going to cause you to be more hypervigilant.
Yes. And one of the other things that I wanted to mention is that, and I can't tell you how many people know this or how many people don't know it, but it's something that we have not talked about in the Black community in a long time. I find it very, very interesting that we watch and talk about Steve Bannon. We talk about the maggot. We talk about all of the things that have happened on the right side. Well, it's really interesting. Bill Cosby has been released from prison and he must be at home or wherever he is. We're not talking about Bill Cosby, but what people in the Black community are not talking about is the fact that maybe 20 years ago, 15, 20 years ago, Bill Cosby went on a crusade to clean up the Black community. Yeah. He went on a crusade. And prior to that crusade, he put in a bid for NBC. NBC. And he went to the table, he and his entourage, because of course it requires an entourage of supporters and backers. He went to the table with his entourage. They told him that he didn't have enough money and his entourage was not big enough. His stable of principles was not big enough. He left, went back. He offered to buy NBC for $4.3 billion. They said no deal. Well, soon after that, what's Jane Fonda's husband, ex-husband's
Turner,
name?
Turner.
Ted Turner. Ted Turner came in and bought NBC for $1 billion less. He bought it for $3.4 billion. Instead of the $4.3 billion that they wanted from Bill Cosby. He bought Turner Broadcasting. Turner Broadcasting bought it. Well, soon after that, that's when he began the crusade, telling people to stop buying the sneakers with somebody else's logo, stop buying sneakers, stop listening to all of that, pull your pants up, read a book, go to the library, take care of your family. Bill Cosby went on that. Then after that, Bill Cosby did all these things to these women and they put him in prison, but nobody's talking about that. That's what media does. And I'm not going to say all of the things that he was convicted of. I wasn't there, so I don't know if he did it or not. I know they waited a long, long time before they came out with it. Mm-hmm. I know that. Okay. Wow.
Because we know we're going to have listeners who, one thing I want to say about trauma is that that's not unusual at all, that people wait a long time to bring up trauma. Because I work with people who 20, 30, 40, 50 years have never really told anyone about trauma that might have happened in early life. So I don't want to go down the rabbit hole in that. But I do acknowledge what you're saying, that yes, within the Black community, when someone tries to do something of good, there can be attacks that happen. But we also have to understand that as Black people, we have to live at a certain level too, that the things that our white counterparts can do and get away with, we can't. We saw we had, you know, Obama as a president, and they tried and tried to see what they can get on him, but there was nothing there. Mm-hmm. So part of what we have to recognize, even within the NFL, you know, or within the NBA, absolutely. Yes, they are going to attack the black athletes more. They are not doing things that their white counterparts aren't doing, but they are going to be penalized. So right. We do have to recognize that just in terms of choices, that when we are working to do good, we have to work to be at the highest level, because there are going to be attacks that come up against us. So for those listeners, because I know when trauma comes up, but this is important because it comes up in our community, the same with the R. Kelly and everything that has mm-hmm. come up. You know, people love his music. It doesn't mean that people will, some people may stop loving the music. Some people will still love it. It doesn't take away that he is a talented individual. We know that as an artist. But then when these other areas come up, as you say, that isn't discussed within our community as well. And trauma within itself is an area that from the time of slavery up until now, the abuses that have occurred and continue to occur, it's still something that is not talked about much in our community. And we need platforms for that as well. That's why I was thankful to be brought into the Intentional Talk Radio Network family to talk about those mental health issues. Oftentimes within Black families, there isn't prosecution that happens if it's a family member mm-hmm. or a friend. That does not happen, similar like how you talked about was, you know, listening to radio. It doesn't mean that Black people don't listen, but the numbers aren't as high. And in terms of like what happens in families, oftentimes there is cover up, there's not believing what happened, and then there's a lot of intergenerational cycles that continue from there.
I read a quote by George Clooney today, and I'm just going to paraphrase real quickly. He said, talking about the whole Me Too movement and all that, he said, nowadays in Hollywood, and I'm kind of paraphrasing, he said, you can't be a dick and get away with it anymore. So taking that into context and then going back to Bill Cosby, and I'm not condoning anything he may or may not have done.
Right.
And we don't need to go down this rabbit hole, but things were, you know, things were
awfully suspicious.
The timing of things. And things like that. So we could have to do another entire program on that.
Yes.
But I just think that there's more to than meets the eye. But yeah. I do also want to bring up, speaking of media, I want to bring up Byron Allen. Dr. Ross, I'm not sure if you know what he's doing. Byron Allen, do you recall him, the comedian?
No, I'm not sure.
He wasn't very successful as a comedian. I think he just wasn't Black enough for most Black folks, you know, because his delivery was
another stereotype.
Yeah,
that
exactly. Yeah,
has
yeah,
to be.
Yes. Yeah,
he was not Bernie Mac
or
Steve
Richard
Hardy.
Pryor or somebody
Richard
else.
Richard Pryor for, yeah, he wasn't that.
Was a little
yeah.
short guy.
Kevin Hart.
He wasn't Kevin that.
Yes.
Very well spoken, quote unquote, talk like a white boy. You know, you hear that. But what he has done, he has become a media mogul. He owns 10 stations, Yolanda?
He actually owns 16.
16. He owns 16
different networks.
He owns the Weather Channel.
Yes. Yes.
He goes
nice.
In and buys these yes. smaller stations. He sued Comcast. Because he wanted.
Yes, I remember.
Okay. He wanted, mm-hmm. I can't remember what the deal was he was trying to make with them. They would not even sit down with him, and he sued them. I believe he won.
Yes.
I believe
he did win.
Yeah, he won that. But when I talk about the fact that when people say there's no good role models, I would rather have my children follow him as a role model than Michael Jordan or Magic
exactly.
Johnson or something
exactly.
like that. Because there's a better chance of doing that than it is becoming an NBA star.
That's right.
Or another star. And
right.
so he is doing some things that are incredible. And what he also does is he goes out and he buys the rights to sitcoms or movies, and then he sells
yes.
it back to other stations in order to play
yes.
that stuff. And he's doing it in a very
very strategic.
Very strategic.
Very strategic
not
manner.
Secretive,
yes.
but he's not out there like you know, he's not sitting there in a bathtub full of money like Floyd Mayweather. He's not ostentatious about it, but he's just about a billionaire.
He's getting there. He's building the wealth.
Yeah, and see, those are the types of things that those are the types of images that we need to project, and we need to really push and have our children see that these people are doing things. And one of the interesting things is about these this next generation, the millennials and Xers, is a lot of them are coming up saying, and I've heard black kids say that, we were told that we could do anything we want, but then we get out there and we find out, and I'm paraphrasing, we find out there's all this racism and discrimination. Well, yeah, you can still do whatever you want, but understand that there are going to be obstacles. It's not easy. Mm-hmm. It's never going to be easy.
Right. And see,
we were told you got to work, you know, four times as hard, times as long in order to get half as much. Mm-hmm. You know, and so we didn't want to be hard on our kids. We said, just do what, you know, you can be what you want to be. But I guess some people just
work.
Yeah, you don't understand you got to work and that there's going to be obstacles and you got to figure out how to a way to get around them. So,
well, I think this is like anything. If you think about people who are wealthy, meaning they've had wealth for generations, they grow up where they are on the receiving end of the dividends, but maybe didn't have to do that mm-hmm. level of work. So it feels different, right? So this is when we think about privilege and the neural pathways, if people haven't had necessarily the struggle themselves, it feels different. And for many Black people, generations have struggled so much and so hard to get to where they are that they want this next generation to have things. It just has to be balanced. You know, like I tell my daughter all the time, even just having a meal, you know, there's people who don't have food like this. You know, there's people who may not eat today. And she'll say, really, children, even children too? I said, yes. And I said, there's people who don't have places to live.
Yes.
They live on the street. So, you know, I think it's just grounding that because it's like anything. When you've been oppressed so long, you want to be free.
Yeah. Yeah.
You want to have something. Mm-hmm. When you've been living in poverty for so long, you're happy to have things. So sometimes the next generation is just making sure that they understand what the struggle was for.
And when you can provide for your kids better than your parents provided, you want to provide for them and you want them to have it a little bit easier. You want to give them a little bit more.
But the struggle is still there.
And the struggle will never go away. And I think
I think
the sooner we realize that and understand that this we don't own the system. You know, people talk about the system being broken. The system is not broken. The system is working exactly
the way it was
designed.
Yes.
It was not
to work for the people
way
who
they
developed it.
I got into an online argument about 1776 with a guy on the internet. This was several years ago. He said 1776 was freedom for everybody in America. I said, wait a minute. Black people
what
were still slaves. But
yes.
see, mm-hmm. some people, they have no concept of anything any different. You know, they had it a certain way. Like you said, they've grown up with this privilege and
that's all they
freedom.
Know.
And they assume everybody's got it. There was a college professor, I forget where they were, that asked white students, what is it like being white in America? And they went, what do you mean?
Yeah, isn't everybody?
Well, tell us about the white experience. They're like, there's no whitey. We're just here. We're just, Now, when you
but
start,
that goes to show a standard, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Everything
when
defaults.
You are the standard.
And you are the
don't
default.
Have,
right.
Right. You don't have that concept. But I moderated a critical race theory panel a couple of weeks back, and one of the Black professors, Dr. Richard Harvey, who's at SLU, he used the analogy of like, how does a fish know that it's wet? Like, how do you describe wetness
to a fish
if there hasn't been, there isn't the concept of dryness? So when we think about oppression, we have been living in oppression for centuries.
Yes.
So that's on our end. So what about those who are privileged?
Right.
They've been privileged for so long, they don't have a concept. Now you have some who are willing to learn. Those are like the white allies who want to do social justice work and are active in it. Because allyship means you're active. You're not just talking about it. But outside of that, there are people who they don't want to.
Absolutely.
They don't want to lose their privilege.
Right. And I don't remember the instructor's name, but there are two instructors, I believe, a white woman and also a white man who send their students through this challenge. And he begins with something like 100 students who are standing across. And he says, if you live at home with both parents, step forward.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And if you
walk.
Yeah. And he goes through this scenario.
With students.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He goes through this scenario. And then when all of the white kids make it to the front line, he says, now step back, turn around and see who's behind you. He says, those are the ones who don't have the privileged life that you do. And had he not done that, they never would have had a concept of what he was talking about. They never would have had that concept. So they've done this. And when you stop and think about it, if you were doing that in reverse, if you put all black kids, if you ask them, what are the images that you see? Who lives at home with their mom and their dad? Nobody would move forward. I worked at a school, and we talk about this frequently. I worked at a school in Los Angeles where 70 to 75% of the student body were foster care kids. So for the kids there, it was the same thing. So when they saw certain images on television, they all said that wasn't true. And Ken tells the story about someone, about, I can't remember if it was one person or several people that said the Cosby Show wasn't reality.
Oh, yeah. That was a big thing during that time. Yeah. A lot of black
folks didn't buy it. The Cosby Show wasn't reality, because that's not how the black community lives. You'll never find a black family with two professional parents in the home, a doctor and an attorney. That ain't going to happen. So we have these images that are oppressed. We have images that could never be a doctor and an attorney in one home. I've had kids where a girl said in my class, she says, I live in an apartment complex. She said, there are 14 units, not one man in the entire complex, not one daddy at home, not one. So
mentorship is important. So again, this is solution focused. We do understand that zip code is a predictor for life expectancy.
Absolutely.
And we know that they are social determinants for physical and mental health incomes. Where you live is the environment you're exposed to, the school you attend, how you're educated, the housing, all of that impacts outcomes. But for those of us who know that that is not the limit, this is where we have to first, of course, charity starts at home, right? We do what we need to do for our family. Then we see what we can do for our neighborhood. Then we see what we can do for our community. Now, because I work in mental health, I know not everyone has that capacity. Because if a person is depressed or they're anxious or they have PTSD or a serious psychotic disorder, they might not have enough energy for that. But for those who do, this is where, like, yes, that's our each one teach one, each one reach one. So when we go into those communities, you know, there are a lot of people who go, like the Lean On Me story, right? There are plenty of people who still are doing that. They're going into the communities and they're changing that, because social learning theory already tells us that if teachers have high expectations of their students, those students will excel and do better.
Yes.
So when you go into school and nobody cares about you because they think you're a statistic, you're not going to be anything, your mama wasn't anything, your daddy wasn't anything, then they limit themselves.
And that's a big problem we have in our community. I always say this, that not only do we accept failure, but we expect failure.
Anticipate.
Many of us expect failure. And so when somebody fails, everybody goes, oh, well, we knew it. He was going to do this. And so that's another thing that we have to change. We have to change our expectations of our children. We have to expect that they're going to do more. We have to expect that they're going to do better than us. We have to expect different things. But, you know, there's a whole dynamic, pathology behind it.
That's another show on social learning theory, observational learning. We will do that as well. But, I mean, this is a good note for us to wrap up on as we're winding down. So, I mean, this has been a wonderful, awesome dialogue today. We're so thankful to have you in the community with Intentional Talk Radio Network. Before we wrap up, any last comments that you'd like to share with our listeners?
One is, listen to Intentional Talk Radio Network for information for education, for motivation, for inspiration, and for edifying. Listen to Intentional Talk Radio. We have 13 shows with wonderful, wonderful hosts who disseminate information that you will not get anywhere else. You'll get it right here on the Intentional Talk Radio Network.
Yeah, what she said.
And can you just list for those who are on, just list maybe three or four shows.
Yes, our shows on Sunday. We also have New Horizon. We have Dr. Amala Luncheon and Taryn Callender with Everyday Lessons Now.
Okay.
Great show. We also have In Your Own Words on Mondays. We also have Your Life, Your Health on Tuesday. We have In the Mix conversations with Colette and Corliss. We have the Common Community on Wednesdays. We have To Tell a Story. A Story to Tell on Wednesdays.
And then we have Smart Money Moves on Wednesday as well.
On Wednesday. We have Menu Mondays, and we're ready for Menu Mondays tomorrow. And folks, don't forget, on the 4th of December, which is next Saturday, Intentional Talk Radio Network, I will be out at Miss Mary's Southern Kitchen in Dallas/Coppell, Texas, with a remote to bring in the holidays. So join us right here, ITRNradio.com. Thank you, Dr. Keisha Ross. It's been great. We want to do this again.
Thank you, Dr.
Ross. Thank you so much to Ms. Yolanda Williams and Mr. Kenny Strother. We thank you so much for being on New Horizon Mind and Body Connection. Our next show will be in the new year, as we will be on hiatus in December. We will have our holiday special on the second Sunday in December from 6 to 8 p.m. Central Standard Time. So check that out, and you will hear from us in the new year, and have a wonderful rest of the year. A happy new year, and we look forward to continued longevity on New Horizon, the Mind and Body Connection. Take care. Yes.
Take care. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to the Intentional Talk Radio Network. This is Colette Williams.